KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The FBI has not paid out the $10,000 reward the agency offered more than 2 years ago for information into the death of Mona Vallo on the Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico. Her case, a suspected hit and run, is one of hundreds of unsolved deaths and disappearances of Native Americans. We'll hear more about it and learn about another woman's relentless drive in the face of official resistance to find justice in the death of her daughter. That's coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. A new report shows the Trump administration's plans to repeal clean energy tax credits could increase energy bills for households, including those in Indian country, especially in the West. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports.
U.S. households could see their annual energy costs rise significantly by the end of the decade if Congress repeals the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits. That's according to independent research firm Rhodium Group, which estimated price changes in electricity, gasoline, and natural gas. In many parts of our region, household energy bills could jump $250 or more, which is higher than the anticipated national average. That includes Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona. Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana could see their energy bills climb just over $100 a year by the end of the decade. Report author Ben King.
If the motivation behind some of these policy changes is to try to reduce energy costs, our evidence suggests that certainly these policy changes pull in the opposite direction of that.
Right now, household electricity costs are relatively flat across the Mountain West compared to a year ago. That's according to the Federal Energy Information Administration. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
An unusual protest in British Columbia that's seen by some as a form of justice may be going too far, authorities say. The family of a man accused of a targeted killing on the northern archipelago of Haida Gwaii has been banished from the community. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Tyson Young was charged with second-degree murder after a member of the Haida Gwaii community of Skittagat was killed by a vehicle. Police say Luke Pearson was the victim of a targeted homicide. Several members of Young's family fled after they say they were threatened by residents of the community. Then their homes were bulldozed, and local businesses said anyone associated with the accused was not welcome in their shops. The family was essentially evicted and banished from Haida Gwaii. During the journey, they were prevented from sleeping, eating, or refueling in other indigenous territories. Protesters gathered along the route with signs saying, "Justice for Luke." Others followed the convoy in their own vehicles, sometimes for hours. Smogolgam is a hereditary chief of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. He was also one of the protesters.
Our ancestors, whenever somebody was exiled from their own territories, they're expelled from their territory, and as they're leaving, their neighboring territories and all the allies that they've got are not allowed to serve them. They're expected to pass through the territory and continue on. And that's kind of what we're doing here. We're upholding our old laws.
Other leaders say a number of indigenous communities have been struggling with drug deaths, especially among young people. And this protest is indicative of the frustrations that many are feeling. Police have been monitoring the family's journey, and out of an abundance of caution, a police escort was provided. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A farm in Salem, Oregon that teaches traditional ecological knowledge to youth has just had some federal funds unfrozen. After President Trump took office this year, many federal agencies have weathered cuts and cancellations. That includes the USDA, which had previously approved three grants to Elderberry Wisdom Farm. Board President Rose Hybear.
The roots of traditional ecological knowledge are grounded in our spirituality. And a lot of people have forgotten their traditions, and we need to restore our own native spirituality and our relationship with our oldest grandmother, the Mother Earth.
Hybear says U.S. Representative Andrea Salinas helped restore a grant worth $750,000. Elderberry Wisdom Farm is now looking for interns to do native stewardship practices. One will be planting trees in a lower income area of Salem.
We have heat waves here in Salem. When you've got a low tree canopy, it can be 30 degrees hotter than in the more prosperous neighborhoods. So we're really committed to help our ecosystem and to help our young people to get into careers that are more fulfilling to them.
High Bear says funding remains a concern as the internship program's account will dry out next year. You're listening to National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support provided by Alaska Growth Capital. The Aleut Marketplace is now open. Aleut Corporation shareholders and registered descendants are eligible. Applications are available at alaskagrowth.com under Marketplace.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Micah Westwolf's death on the Blackfeet Reservation in Montana and the slow pace of the investigation made national news. The driver responsible was just sentenced in February after the dedicated efforts of her parents and other relatives. Along the way, that effort brought to light other hit-and-run fatalities of Native people that remain unsolved. One of those is Mona Vio, who was killed on the Laguna Pueblo in 2022. She and others are on the long list of Native relatives whose deaths or disappearances remain a mystery. Today is National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives Awareness Day. We will explore the pervasive problem and what's being done about it. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. On the line now from Toppenish, Washington, is Darlene Gomez. She's an attorney and MMIP activist. Darlene, good morning and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us from Toppenish, Washington, on the Yakima Nation is Adrian Jackson. He's the eldest son of Mona Vio. He's from the Yakima Nation. Adrian, good morning to you as well, and welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for reaching out and giving me this time to share my mom's story.
Absolutely. Joining us from Missoula, Montana, is Carissa Heavyrunner. She's a founder of Micah Matters, and she is an MMIP advocate. She's Blackfeet and Diné. Carissa, good morning to you, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Absolutely. And we have two more guests who are joining us on the road en route from Atlanta, Georgia to Cherokee, North Carolina, Shiashi Little Dave and Asha Stevens. They are the hosts of We Are Resilient, a MMIP true crime podcast. They're both citizens of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. Shiashi and Asha, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Darlene, I want to begin with you. States and local agencies have made progress in recent years recognizing the disparities for missing and murdered Indigenous people. Can you give us a short status report on how events and actions and activities are evolving?
I think for one, we have more states who are having MMIP task force. And then we have communities who are banding together to say, we will no longer not hold agencies and law enforcement accountable. And we're constantly seeing families joining together to become stronger, to support one another in what we see as a travesty of MMIP throughout this country.
There was a federal commission that issued a report a couple of years ago as part of the Not Invisible Act. This report made a number of recommendations to solve these disparities. The Trump administration removed that report from publicly available website. Does that in itself create any problems or hurdles for your work?
Well, I think for one, it was 211 pages of recommendations. And the Not Invisible Act committee members and all of the families who spoke, telling their stories, it is a slap in the face to have it removed. And I think our most vulnerable is our children in foster care. who the Not Invisible Act report had specific findings to help those children remain safe. And we're just going into the Emily Pike story, the young woman from us, from the San Carlos Apache Reservation, who was dismembered while she was in foster care. And so I just think that this is going to make families just move, you know, move forward, because that's what they've been doing for years, is they're having to solve their own cases. They're having to be their own investigators. And so this is definitely a slap in the face to Native American communities throughout this nation.
Darlene, what about the staff layoffs and budget cuts we're seeing at the federal level? What's the impact there with regard to MMIP investigations and cases?
The cut in funding is going to have such a negative effect, because we're also talking about police departments on reservations and pueblos who are already lacking officers. They're lacking training. They're lacking the ability to provide evidence to the state and federal agencies. This is going to be completely devastation throughout Indian country. And then we also have, you know, the FBI, who stated that they're going to have 60 agents come into Indian country to help with the MMIP crisis. So on one hand, FBI is saying, hey, we're going to go in and put more resources. But then on the other hand, you're taking all these resources away. And I believe that Indian country, when it comes to police agencies, is so underfunded. And that's why we're seeing this enormous amount of murdered and missing Indigenous people that is not getting better. The numbers keep rising.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to hold everybody accountable.
Darlene, you mentioned the numbers are rising. I'm curious to know, there are different websites, there are blogs, there are social media platforms all across Indian country. Where do you go? Where do you look to track progress for MMIP? And what are the metrics that you're looking for to see progress?
I think, for one, there is not any reliable data throughout this country. There's so much underreporting. There's many agencies that don't report at all. So when I talk about what I see, is trends that I see in the communities I work with and the families that I represent in the community. So I've been doing this for almost 25 years. And so I continuously see, even in the past 5 years, that the numbers from different communities are just rising. And I also look to the FBI. They have a list that comes out in New Mexico for Navajo Nation enrolled members and Native Americans in New Mexico. And if you see those numbers, they continue to rise. And so I think that is something that we can look at statistically that is being followed and implemented by the FBI.
Darlene, you've been on the show before, and we've talked about how families sometimes will just reach out to you. They know that you are an attorney who will advocate on behalf of MMIP cases. But I imagine you get a lot of calls, you get a lot of requests. How do you decide which cases you're willing to take on?
You know, right now I keep saying I'm not taking any more cases. It falls on my heart to hear the despair and to hear how families are just so underrepresented by having attorneys, and knowing that I can make a difference in the case of someone's missing mother or daughter, son. And so I think sometimes it's persistency. I just have taken on a new case out of the Navajo Nation last week, and his name is Dwayne Thomas. He's been missing for 13 years. His mother passed away last year, and she was just wanting to have some kind of closure, and she never got that. And so now that I've been out here in Washington, I've gotten a request every single day. So my plea is to your listeners who are attorneys, please, please consider taking at least one case pro bono, because it makes a huge difference in having these families get justice.
Today, of course, National Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives Awareness Day. Darlene, what are you and some of these other folks doing to mark the occasion?
I think many people that I know are attending events in their states where they are just having their voice heard by telling their story. I happen to be in the Yakima Nation, who is having a symposium, and they have all of these wonderful speakers. And I think oftentimes families of MMIP, they don't take care of themselves. And so I love the fact that the Yakima Nation is talking about healing and how to move forward and how to grieve properly, because so oftentimes these families are just seeking justice and looking for their loved ones that they don't take the moment to even breathe. So it's refreshing to see different organizations that are now coming forward offering services.
All right. Thank you, Darlene. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848, if you would like to join the conversation. Let's go to our next guest now, Adrian Jackson, the eldest son of Mona Vio. And Adrian, you have become a voice for your mother. And sadly, she was killed in an apparent hit-and-run incident in Laguna Pueblo, New Mexico, back in 2022. No one has been held accountable for her death. What do you want people to know about your mother?
I want people to know about my mother. I mean, she was a grandmother, an auntie, a sister, a cousin, a teacher in our ways, our traditional ways, especially to my daughters and to my siblings, to all her grandchildren. That's something they will hold in their heart forever. But there are some things I know that she was wanting to still share with them, and she can't do that. And that's a part of where I have to step in and fill in those shoes, them and my wife and my brother and their wives too. So she was, yeah, outspoken person. Everywhere she traveled a lot, everywhere she went, she met people, and everyone I've talked to throughout here in the Northwest, they remember her for her laugh, her jokes, I mean, her kind heart. I mean, she was pretty stern with what things she had to say. And I mean, she encouraged everybody to live their life to the fullest and live with what you got, and which is a good teaching to my girls, because I see everything that she's taught to them coming out now as them being young women now. I have two girls that are young women now, and I see a lot of that in them, which is amazing, outstanding, and just to see them be strong young women like how my mother was.
Right, Adrian. We're going to take a short break. Adrian, we're going to come back, and I want to ask you any updates with regard to your mother's case. But before we do that, we do have to take a short break. And I encourage listeners right now to join the conversation. If you perhaps are an MMIP advocate in your community, or you're involved in any of these efforts today on MMIW Awareness Day, you can join the conversation. Just give us a call. Our phone lines in our Albuquerque studio are open. We've got producers who are waiting. They'll take your call, 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-996-2848. What are you waiting for? You can join the conversation, too, on Native America Calling. President Donald Trump has issued an order to stop federal funding for National Public Radio and PBS. The action has unnerved Native American broadcasters who rely on federal funding to stay on the air. We'll get updates live from the Native Public Media Summit as broadcasters chart their future. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support from Dartmouth College hosting its Tribal Leadership Academy July 28th to August 2nd in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, health care, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at dartmouthtriballeadershipacademy.com. Application deadline is May 16th, 2025.
Remember me. Sun comes up in the morning sky. There I will be.
There I will be.
soaring with the eagle so high, feeling free. Remembering down the road, hand in hand, you and me.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking about missing and murdered Indigenous people advocacy today. Are you attending an MMIP event? You can join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. That number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. For those of you just now tuning in, we have Adrian Jackson on the line in Toppenish, Washington. He is the eldest son of Mona Vayu, who was killed in an apparent hit-and-run accident on Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico in 2022. Adrian, are there any updates on your mother's case right now you can share with us?
Any updates? None at all that I've been notified by the federal government, the FBI. Last thing I've heard of was my brother. He was mentioning to us that there was a new FBI agent on the case, which will be our third FBI agent that we have not heard any updates. We're supposed to be getting quarterly updates through the agency, which we have not. Luckily, we have Bree Blackhorse up here in our region, our area, so she's been helpful for us trying to poke at the FBI agent down in Albuquerque to get some, at least a word or something with my mother's case, but there has no updates to this day.
Adrian, what happens when you get a new agent like that? Is there a learning curve? Do you have to provide information that's already been provided and do repeat interviews, or can they pretty much just pick up where the previous agent left off?
That's a good question. That would be something I would like to ask them myself also. Darlene, she's got us into the headquarters in Albuquerque to speak with the special agent that was on our case and their bosses and his boss. So when we sat down at that table and discussed what we would like to see from them, they said yes, but that's all we've got. I mean, there's some stuff we haven't seen yet, like a billboard out there at the location by Route 66 between Laguna and Acoma. We still haven't seen that yet put up. Flyers is, I think, the only thing that I've got from the FBI agency. But there is nothing. But, I mean, to get a new agent on it, I mean, I would like to speak to them in person through Zoom or email or phone call like this. That'd be grateful for me, something for me and my other siblings to hear something that they're actually working and putting forth out of my mother's case, because right now we are at a standstill, and I would say we're just chomping at the bit, and we want to hear something from them. Got to hold them accountable for something, because, yeah, we have not heard anything from anybody from down south in Albuquerque area.
We've got a caller on the line. This is Loretta, who is listening in White River, Arizona, on station KNNB. Good morning, Loretta. You are on the air.
Good morning, America Calling. I'm just calling to share that today, here in White River, Arizona, the Miss White Mountain Junior, White Mountain Apache, and Councilwoman Meridi Craig are sponsoring a MMIP walk, and it started this morning. And as I came through town, I couldn't believe the amount of people that had participated. I would say it was well over 1,000 people, and it was awesome to see people waving, carrying their posters. They even had a group of our traditional Apache warriors dancing at the front and singing. They had motorcycles. They had, I mean, it was just really, and the fitness center is right in town. They were ready, waiting for people. They have this big old thing set up there for them to, when they finish. So I just wanted to recognize the White Mountain Apache Tribe that we are here. We support WMIP, and it was really, really good to see the turnout in, and, you know, all these things happening in Native country, that people are finally starting to realize that this is an issue that we have. And I'm not sure if, you know, you heard, but when Ashton, Emily Pike, excuse me, was found, and then we also had a tribal member from here who was missing. She was finally recovered as well.
Mm.
So it helps to keep pushing forward, to keep making our voices heard, because people need to know that we are here and we're supporting this 100%. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Loretta, for calling in and sharing that information from White River, Arizona. 1,000 people out today there in White River as part of the MMIW Awareness Day. Thank you, Loretta. And Adrian, I want to ask you one more question, and we're going to bring Carissa Heavy Runner into the conversation. But hearing just this caller right now from White River and other events across the country, were you involved in any of this awareness work with MMIW before this happened to your family?
Yes, I was. My mom also was traveling to events also just for families. We was involved here locally when it was first started here on the Yakima Reservation. We would go on the marches also. And like I said, my mother, she was involved, and she would travel throughout Washington and Oregon to attend these MMIW events because she has lost family members, cousins, also due to bad circumstances on other reservations.
All right. Adrian, thoughts and prayers to your family. Really appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing with our listeners. Carissa Heavy Runner is in Missoula, Montana. She's the founder of Mica Matters, and she is an MMIP advocate. Carissa, hello again, and I want to thank you as well for coming on and sharing your family story. Your daughter, Micah Westwolf, also died in a hit-and-run accident in 2023. The driver was just sentenced for vehicular homicide in February. I want to ask you, do you think that conviction would have happened without the work that you did personally to help put the facts together for this case? What made the difference?
No, I believe it would not have happened. And I've stated that on other interviews just because of you know, this is a systemic issue. And plus, that's what we brought attention to when we did a, you know, 4-day awareness walk. We brought, we sat down and we talked to other mothers that had also lost children on the same stretch of highway in the similar way, hit and run. And it consisted of the same lead investigator of the Montana Highway Patrol and also the Lake County prosecutor. And right now for, Aiden Finley, I believe that is now going over 5 years, and Marina is 3 years. And now my daughter, we just hit the 2-year mark till we finally got, you know, sentencing. 23 months it took. Mm-hmm. So that shows me that's proof, and that's what we wanted to share with everyone and the rest of the world by having these other mothers share their story, that this is, you know, often how these cases are. It's been years of nothing, no accountability, no charges being brought. And so that's what, you know, I know that we could not stop. We could not lose momentum. And we had to continue to keep our daughter's name out there and use the media to put pressure on Lake County to investigate.
Well, tell us more about that, Carissa, because your family has been through the process and you got resolution. Other families haven't been able to do that. What do you think made the difference with regard to the approach you took?
Gosh, I really don't know. I think a lot of it was the headline that papers came out with in the beginning. You know, when the Montana Human Rights Network contacted us and saying that this should be looked at as a possible hate crime, and then that released the names of the woman's children that were in the car with her when she struck her daughter, and that's what I believe what made this go national, you know, and just quickly media picking it up and interviews and all that. So that, in a sense, helped just, you know, because it was like something that people haven't heard of, I guess. And that's what I believe, me and my husband, that's what made this so big. And plus just that, I guess, we didn't stop doing events and speaking about this at rodeo events, powwows. Other events that museums decided to do to help create awareness and giving families a platform. And so it led to us thinking of different ways how to create events and how to continue to keep our girls' name out there. And then the community started to create events of their own and then just asked Micah Matters to be a part of it. And so it just grew from there. And now we're having a May 5th event at the UC Ballroom. And it's from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. And the media is there, and they allowed me and my friend Lauren to do an interview this morning. We were on KPAX News. And then they are also doing a segment piece of local families that are affected by missing, murder, Indigenous peoples. And to me, that shows the progress that we are making. We are making noise. We aren't staying silent, and families are getting these opportunities to now share their stories. And to me, that just means so much. And I believe that's, you know, a ripple effect that we are hopefully making bigger for other families. And that's the work that we can, that Micah Matters wants to continue to do. And we also came out with a podcast on This American Life. And that also shows more kind of behind the scenes and live recordings with the lead investigator and also the Lake County prosecutor. And so people get to hear that for themselves, you know, how we were talked to and treated. And so, yeah, that really gives some in-depth too, which I feel is effective, even more so for people to understand and hear how hard this is for families to do, when families should just be able to sit back and grieve and not have to be doing investigating. And so that's what we wanted to do with this podcast called This American Life. It's This American Life, and they titled it How to Tell a Dumb American Story.
Okay.
But it's a really good it's a really good podcast. So it
sounds like
that.
It sounds like it, Chris. Yeah. And listening to you describe all of the work that you're doing, not just in the investigating, but the awareness, the presentations, the podcast now, is this a full-time job for you? Or, I mean, how many hours a week do you think you're spending just doing this advocacy work?
Well, now I thought like things would have kind of quieted down, you know, after the sentencing. And I felt like almost like I didn't know what to do with myself. Like, I, you know, you get so into that mindset, fighting for justice and thinking of ways to do different things. And then it was really hard for me to sit back and just grieve. And, you know, just this is what we work so hard for. Was to, you know, earn this time to just, you know, reflect and heal and grieve our daughter. And now I was asked to be part of co-facilitator for our MMIP event. It's called A Place of Good Medicine and Healing. So that's what we are doing too with the community, is the healing side of that, which, you know, I believe affects one of us, affects all of us. And that's what we're doing, is coming together with the community and doing allyship, where there's other organizations that can help with mental health, domestic violence, human trafficking. And, you know, Micah Matters and Haley Omiso's organization, Okomi Forensics. It's a Native led organization. And so just doing things like that, and plus, you know, and the encouraging of people to show up and support. That's what we want more than, you know, just being present, wanting to learn and educate, you know, educate people. I take that time to sit and answer every question if I can. So that's what I'm thankful for today, that we're able to do.
Mm-hmm. And most of your advocacy work, is it based there in Missoula and kind of north central Montana area? Are you doing work in other parts of the country too?
In Missoula, kind of on the Flathead reservation area. And also I go back for awareness walks in my hometown on the Blackfeet Reservation. And I hope to be going to California. There's people that are reaching out over the Micah Matters website asking if I can come speak at a conference in Billings. And so maybe this will lead to that kind of a, you know, job advocacy where people will, you know, want me to come and speak and help share our, you know, our information and experience that we got by, you know, how we strategize to get justice for our daughter and obstacles we were faced with and how we overcame those. So if that's how I can share my daughter's story and share people how to plan, strategize, and I would encourage them to not give up too. That would be my big message, is don't stop. Your voice does matter. Mm-hmm. And you're not alone in this. And I know that, you know, it's hard to heal and move forward if you're not able to share your truth, what happened to your loved one. And oftentimes that's where, you know, the media doesn't follow up on the story. They tell the beginning, you know, from the beginning to the end. And if it reaches a trial or sentencing, it just like doesn't follow it. But we were able to achieve that with our daughter's case, the media being there at every event we were doing and every court hearing all the way to the sentencing. So that's how hard we worked, where we built those relationships with the media to be there and to share, you know, our experience in Micah's story.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I know that area. I've driven those roads in and around Missoula. I've been up to Blackfeet Country, and I know how dangerous those roads can be. And I'm curious, we have about a minute before we have to take another break, but are these hit and run cases, especially up in that part of the country where there are so many roads and they're, you know, some of them are very remote and isolated, are they particularly difficult to solve?
Yeah, I think so. It's just, I don't know. There's just so many factors that go into that. To me, it seems like, you know, it's whatever time and energy that the law enforcement is willing to put into it. And to me, it seems like it doesn't get to be that big. We're not on the top priority list and as Indigenous people. And, you know, that's the facts. Like when Gabby Petito went missing, her name was mentioned on national news like 394 times. We did our research on these things, you know, and even trying to find like articles about people that were killed in hit and runs. I mean, like, just like Darlene said, a lot of this isn't documented, you know, it's not reported. It's not. So I would like for that to someday, you know, be where someone can do this research.
All right. All right. Carissa, thank you as well for joining the show, and thoughts and prayers to you and your family.
Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk with Shiashi Little Dave and Asha Stevens, who are both Eastern Band of Cherokee members. And we're also going to take another call. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show. Trickster Cultural Center, an authentic first voice of Native American veterans and cultural arts, will host the 2025 Summer Youth Powwow to foster community relations, youth literacy, cultural exchange, and provide local community resources. Trickster Cultural Center's Summer Youth Powwow is open to the public at no charge and takes place May 31st in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at TricksterCulturalCenter.org/summer-youth-powwow-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show. Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show. Support provided by Alaska Growth Capital. The North Slope Marketplace is now open. Arctic Slope Regional Corporation shareholders and descendants are eligible. Applications are available at alaskagrowth.com under Marketplace.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We're talking today with MMIP advocates and relatives. You can join the conversation. Tell us why this work is important to you. Just call 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have another caller on the line. This is an anonymous caller from Taos, New Mexico, listening on station KUNM. Hello, Taos, New Mexico. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Spruce. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to you all on the radio for as long as I can remember you being on the radio. And I am a friend and ally. I'm a non-native. And I was down in Santa Fe yesterday. They had a gathering and lots of tourists, of course, coming around. And it was a really good event to hear individual, personal, and mostly heartbreaking stories. I want to note simply a few things, which both of your guests have addressed. The work is, it seems to go on forever. There's no time to grieve, and you have to spread yourself thin in so many areas. So it's very, let's say, uplifting to walk with and to accompany my Native friends. But in my case, when I am able to, I donate my money to my, you know, organization of choice. And there are so many there. And you know, the pro bono work and just the, you know, people have to eat food at the end of the day after sure. they've been working all day. So that's really all I want to say. That's my personal way to participate, in addition to walking and going to gatherings, which are, you know, heartbreaking and uplifting at the same time. This is a way I think it's really important. When I have the means, I give what I can, and that's my message.
All right. Thank you for calling in from Taos, New Mexico, sharing those updates as well. We have two more guests on the show, Shiashi Little Dave and Asha Stevens. They are the hosts of We Are Resilient, a MMIP true crime podcast. They're both citizens of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. They live in Western North Carolina. And Shiashi, I want to begin with you. True crime podcasts. I know that you and Asha were already into that whole genre before you started your own podcast. They're enormously popular. Tell us what's different about We Are Resilient and the message that you both are getting across to not just people there in the EBCI community, but others who listen as well.
I think the big difference with We Are Resilient is that we are specifically focused on MMIP cases. Those are the only cases that we cover. And I think one other thing that makes us unique is that we're telling these stories as Indigenous people and giving that Indigenous perspective. Because we understand Indigenous communities, we're part of Indigenous communities, but we wanted to make sure there was a podcast that was solely dedicated to our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives.
Now, you started your podcast in November of 2021 after the pandemic. You have over 130 episodes. Do you remember that very first episode you did? And what was it that got you and Asha to just make this decision and start this project?
It happened after the discussion started after May 5th of 2021. You know, May 5th, of course, is the MMIW Day of Awareness, but it felt like to me, once that day was over, the world kind of just moved on, and these families are still searching and still seeking justice.
So the idea came up after we heard a podcast covered an MMIP case. And, you know, we thought, we wish there was something that was solely dedicated to our brothers and sisters. And if there's not something out there, then we thought, why not do it ourselves? And that's just, it was born out of that idea.
All right. Asha, I want to bring you into the conversation as well. And what's interesting is you and Shiashi, you're on the road. You're leaving Atlanta, Georgia. You're heading back home to Cherokee, North Carolina. And earlier this morning, you did a presentation with the Atlanta Braves baseball organization. It was on the issue of MMIP. Tell us about that connection.
Yeah, so our tribe is working with the Atlanta Braves just to work with the mascot issue and bringing awareness of who we are as people. And not just a mascot. And so the Women in Baseball department here at the Atlanta Braves invited us to come speak to their staff. And so we did a whole presentation on who we are and the silent epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous people. And during our presentation, during our talk, it was to about 90 people. I asked them if they'd even heard of Emily Pike, and nobody raised their hand. And so it was just interesting to us that even though it got a little bit of traction, a little bit of media, it didn't get nationwide attention. And so we told them the story of Emily Pike, and we told them other stories. And so we really just wanted to educate them and bring awareness to this very tragic thing that is happening in Indian country and that so many families are affected by.
And what do you hope to accomplish by sharing this information with the Atlanta Braves organization? Is it possible that they could assist with some of this advocacy work in the future?
Well, I know that they're having an MMIP day over the summer. So they're going to have a game where they always have EBCI night. And so on EBCI night this year, they're going to give out MMIP bracelets to guests, to people who come to the ball game. So they are doing a little bit to bring awareness to this, because I think people just don't know. And we really stress that there's so many families, and that we don't know of one family in our community that has not been affected by a missing and murdered Indigenous person. And we really want to bring that awareness. So I think just getting people thinking about it, talking about it, listening to our podcast, and we always say this podcast is not about us. It's not about Asha. It's not about Shiashi. It's about these stories that we share. And so the more that we can bring the awareness to people, the more that word gets out there and these stories are shared and these names are talked about and what happened to them, because somebody out there knows something. And if we can shed light on it, that's our whole purpose of doing what we do.
Asha, you and Shiashi have a website, and you have the different episodes listed. You have pictures and descriptions of some of the cases that you cover on your podcast. How do you pick and choose which cases you're going to cover for the show?
So you should just do searches. A name would come across just on social media of people sharing posters or sharing a story. Here recently, over the past, probably last year, we've gotten people reaching out to us wanting us to share their stories. We have about 30 requests in our mailbox asking us to cover their stories of their family member. And so that helps us to kind of create a list of who we're going to cover next. It links us to more resources, because one barrier is finding resources, news articles, any kind of coverage of people who are missing or murdered, and trying to tell a story about what happened to them and sharing their story can be difficult when there's no resources or they're very limited.
Shiashi, back to you. What feedback are you and Asha getting? And I'm specifically there from other Eastern Band members who've listened to the podcast and have just become aware of these cases that you've done reports on.
You know, the feedback we've got has been generally positive. I think we've gotten emails and we've gotten messages from families that are just really appreciative that we're helping bring awareness and saying the names of their loved ones. And that's all we're trying to do, is just bring awareness and make sure people are aware of these cases and aware of the injustice that's continuing to happen out there to our brothers and sisters.
Now, you both have full-time jobs. About how many hours a week or a month do you devote to the podcast and some of these other projects that you're working on?
Ooh, it'd be hard to put it in hours. It's a lot of our spare time. We do the research, we do the recording, editing, all of it's in-house. It's between me and Osh, and we do all the work ourselves, and we absolutely think it's worth the time and effort to help bring awareness to these cases. It's hard to put it in hours because it all tends to kind of blur together just how much work we do.
Now, before the show, we talked, and you told me that before you started the project that you knew that MMIP, it was an epidemic, but when you really dug into the data and you really did some of this investigating, you were just kind of overwhelmed and blown away by just how big a problem it really is. You've learned a lot through this process.
Oh, most definitely. You know, and I think the hardest thing for us is even though we've covered over 130 cases, we still barely scratch the surface of just how prevalent MMIP is. So when you look at the data and you see how many cases are out there and how many cases that are that it's underreported, that we don't have accurate data of how many MMIP cases there are, it is overwhelming. It's a lot of work, but we're going to continue to do the work that we can to bring awareness to this issue.
Let's go back to the phones where we have Scotty, who is listening in Kotzebue, Alaska, on station KOTZ. Good morning, Scotty. Thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Spruce. Yes, I'd like to introduce myself first. I am Scotty Barr. I am originally from Kotzebue, Alaska. I am residing in Anchorage, Alaska. Right now, I'm working at a mine not too far away from Kotzebue, which is Red Dog Mine. And I understand that today is a national holiday for missing and murdered Indigenous people. And I wanted to introduce myself as a parent that went through the same situation as many other parents around Alaska, as well as around of America, United States. Just a short synopsis. Back in 2018, September 2018, my late daughter Ashley Johnson Barr was 10 years old. She went missing for 8 days, from September 6th to the 14th. She was found just right outside of Kotzebue. She was brutally murdered. She was brutally raped. Once they found her body, you know, the communities of Kotzebue and the surrounding villages of Kotzebue, as well as the whole state of Alaska, came to our need to support us in many ways. And, you know, we were able to find the person that killed our daughter, and we were able to go and seek the justice that we wanted to go and have. But first, I had to go and thank God for having him in our hands and having our daughter in our hands as well, too, for the case. You know, I have to thank him first, and then I got to thank everybody else, all my families, my friends, all of my daughter's siblings, nieces, uncles, nephews, aunties, grandparents. You know, ever since then, it's going on 7 years now, and I've been a personal advocate for our daughter as well as many others around the state of Alaska and whoever else that needs an extra voice. You know, I think it's very important for the families that are seeking justice and seeking their loved ones to continue their voice and be the voice for their loved ones, including myself. You know, but I have to put God first for him to go ahead and give me the voice.
Sure.
You know, I want to continue to be our daughter's voice. I continue wanted to go ahead and make sure that her voice is still being heard like many other families.
Absolutely. Scotty, thank you. Thank you for calling in, and thoughts and prayers to your family as well. Scotty, listening on KOTZ, and I want to go back to Shiashi, Little Dave, and Asha Stevens as we begin to wind down the show. And Asha, I want to ask you, because listening to our other guests and listening to our callers, and we heard Carissa just talk about the importance of self-care, and this must be tough for you and Shiashi to do these stories and talk to some of these families. How do you folks just go about taking care of yourselves and your own mental health when doing this work?
So first off, I want to say our podcast has covered Micah and Ashley's story. And so it's an honor to be able to be on this interview with them, because, you know, we felt love for them. We felt the grief for them. And so I just want to say, you know, thank you for having us today and letting us at least come together in some sort. But yeah, when we started this podcast, when we would finish a story, we would have to decompress. We'd kind of sit around and be like, wow, that was really heavy. That was really hard. Like, it just took us a minute. Recently, within the past year, we started another podcast, and it's called Skilly Queens. And Skilly, in our language, in the Cherokee language, means like a witch or a booger, a monster kind of thing. And it's very opposite of MMIW podcast that we have. We talk about legends from all over the tribe, from tribes all over the country, and we just kind of put a light spin on it, where it's just the total opposite of what we do. It's unscripted. We just kind of talk about life and talk about indigenous legends. And so it kind of helps us to, after we record a heavy story or an episode that's just really pulling at the heartstrings and got our emotions all worked up, it's good to have another podcast that we're able to just be a little lighthearted on. But sometimes these stories last with us for days, and, you know, just getting out, taking a walk, talking about it, it helps.
All right. All right. Asha and Shiashi, thank you also for joining the show. You take care of yourselves and safe travels home, okay?
Thank you.
All right. We're going to have to wrap up the conversation. We are out of time, but I want to thank all of our guests who joined us today. Darlene Gomez, Adrian Jackson, Carissa Heavy Runner, Asha Stevens, and Shiashi Little Dave, and also the callers who joined the conversation. We really appreciate you folks too. Everyone who contributed to our conversation on today, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's and Relatives Awareness Day. Join us again tomorrow when we'll be live at the National Native Public Broadcaster Summit, taking place this week on tribal lands of the Santa Ana Pueblo. We'll hear about the future of Native-led radio and other media. I'm Sean Spruce. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
Skuktash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove.
GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
Thank you.